a passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver. Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show. We are going to take you on a magical, mystical ride right now. We are going to take this, which you may think is the second Thursday of the month, and going to tell you that we're transporting you back in time to the first Thursday of the month. And as we all know, on the first Thursday of the month, we have none other than Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed, who you can hear at 95.3 WMNH out of Manchester, New Hampshire, 4 to 6, Monday through Friday, or on mattconnerton.com or on ipmnation.com, and that he's here the first Thursday of every month. So though you may think it's the second Thursday of every month, it is actually the first Thursday. Welcome, Matt.
Everyone's mind is blown. Welcome. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. It's so good to have you back here on the first Thursday of the month in December, the last month of the year. And are you ready for it? 2021.
Yes.
Yes, yes. So, tell me, I know you had an event last week, and Miss Lori came in, and we actually had a lot of fun. I dug her out of the archives, so to speak, and I pressed her into service last week. We did a show on holidays, and creating new traditions.
And, very nice.
Yeah, it was a good show. We talked about how to let go of what maybe was in your childhood that doesn't really serve who you are now or where we are in the world now. Start your own tradition. You don't have to do something like eat too much, drink too much, spend too much money, just because that's what you were brought up observing.
Right.
You could choose to do something healthy. Something, exactly. maybe give a present to the planet and to your body and do some good works.
Right.
That's
a good idea.
Yes. I was talking earlier today to somebody and I said to them, and I knew I wasn't going to offend them when I said this, but as I say this to you, I know I won't offend you, but there may be a few of my listeners that get offended over this, but that's okay. I said, you really know that this holiday has so little left to do with anything, considering A, Jesus was not born on the 25th of December of any year ever in, creation. If he was actually in existence and did live, historical Jesus, he wasn't born around March, really. Historical records would talk about based on what they could do. So it's a fallacy that really is really, in the last 50 years, been about celebrating the birth of retail into the obnoxious, consumer-obsessed, suck-your-life-energy-out monster that it has become. And that's really what we celebrate on every 25th of December. What do you think?
Well, yeah, a couple things. So I went to Catholic school from grade 2 to grade 8, and I guess, but, the Catholic school that I went to, it wasn't like you see in, in movies or you read about in books. They weren't hitting us with rulers for writing left-handed or anything like that. It was a bit more progressive. And we were actually taught that that the birth of Christ is, in fact, in dispute in terms of when it happened. And I seem to recall Sister Margarita, my eighth grade teacher, saying that they thought it might have been sometime in June, but it was they were very open about that at St. John's, that that the birth of Christ is not necessarily December 25th, and that in fact probably was not, but that date was chosen for whatever reason. And And, you know, as far as the true meaning of Christmas, which is capitalism, you know, it's easy to be cynical about it. And I used to work in retail and I was pretty cynical about it. But it is, I do think it's important to our economy, the national economy, to have this giant surge in purchasing every year. You know, a lot of businesses depend on it. So I'm not too cynical about it.
Well, I think that my view comes from this is that, A, we have the issue of people spending money they don't have, of kids valuing their worth on the gifts that they get, that not all families are created equally, especially when it comes to finances. And I think that there's a lot of underlying really toxic messages that end up. I mean, you know, it would be one thing to say, hey, it's a great time to set aside to recognize people you love with little gifts. But, I mean, people spend themselves into practically bankruptcy. And kids are taught that somehow, you know, their value is associated with the number of gifts under the tree. So, I mean, I think it's got some flaws there as well.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely. Well, we live in a very materialistic culture.
And you're just a material girl. You know what they say. It's just a material world, and you're just a material girl. That's all there is to it, Matthew.
Let's not be so genderist, please. It's almost 2022.
So you did some charity event last week while you couldn't be here, wasn't it, or something like that? Am I like completely turning this around in my head?
Nope, that's correct. So last week, last Thursday, WMNH was part of the Miracle on Elm Street, which is a wonderful event organized by a gentleman named Matt Cushane here in Manchester with his organization Hope for New Hampshire. And it's a toy drive, effectively. And we were broadcasting all day beginning at, I wasn't there at the beginning of the day, but beginning at 7 a.m. with the morning show. And then we did an afternoon broadcast, a noontime broadcast that I was a part of. And then I did my show live from there as well. The event was held at the Bonfire, which is a great bar. It's technically a country bar. I'm not really into country music, but it's a very, very cool place right in downtown Manchester. So we were broadcasting from there all day, and I did my show from the Bonfire. And so it was a live remote. And that's why I couldn't be here last week, because as the day grew closer, I began to realize that logistically, it was probably not realistic that I was going to be able to just, you know, finish up my show and then call into here like I usually do, because I was going to be there, and we were going to have work to do after I got off the air, obviously. So, very, very successful event, raised, lots of people donated toys, and we raised a lot of money in monetary donations as well. So a very successful day for a great cause. And I was very happy to be a part of it this year. It was very exciting.
Nice.
Yeah.
See, everything to do around the charity aspect, doing things for people, families that are in tough situations, all that stuff. That's the stuff I love about Christmas.
Yes. You know, absolutely.
As we're speaking, I have my 9-foot Christmas tree in my house. I have my Christmas lights on the front and on the back. I am wearing my Santa hat, which gets worn every day from the day after Thanksgiving until the 1st of January. Today, oh. I have my official mistletoe tester T-shirt with Snoopy on it. So I wear a different Christmas shirt every day. So I'm certainly not a bah humbug person. I'm definitely, I think that there's a lot of positive aspects of the Christmas spirit and out there and things going on. And I've had a chance to have a couple of magical moments with little kids who saw me and thought I was Santa, and I actually talked to them like Santa, and they were just thrilled. I mean, I can be a big kid. I just think that I would like to see us not put so much pressure on the over-drinking, overspending, overeating, and part of Christmas. I think that I think it's getting a little out of control. But
yeah. Yeah. No, I don't disagree. I feel like it's kind of always been that way for as long as I can remember to some degree. But being able to be part of something last Thursday, because I'm not a big, I don't really go all in on Christmas. I'm not a big Christmas guy. I think my time in retail may have jaded me a little bit about it. But, I don't really get into it that much. But I don't particularly enjoy Christmas music. Never have. Although I like Mistress for Christmas by AC/DC. That's one of the few Christmas songs I like. But to be a part of something like the Miracle on Elm Street this year, that really really did my heart some good. You know, especially when it's in times when I get very frustrated with people, anti-vaxxers and things like that. So it's kind of life affirming, and it reminds me that there are people doing really good things as well.
Yep. And since we've last spoke, I did get my third. I got my third shot.
Excellent.
I'm all shot up.
Yeah. Good. Good.
Zero side effects. Zero side.
Yeah. Effects. Yeah. That's good. That's good. I always get it. I get after being vaccinated, I get very tired for a day, but well worth it.
Yeah. So I have two agendas for the rest of the show. I will keep the second one second until we get there.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to find out what's been the big stories on Matt Connerton Unleashed, and what do you think of what's going on in the political arena, and give us some insights there, Matt.
Well, you know, today on the show, I discussed something that is not that the mainstream media doesn't really cover at all, but it became an issue with my show. I had to make an editorial decision about something. So a friend of mine, Billy Painter, who, I like him very much personally, but we also work together professionally on some things, and we're very different politically. He's somewhat conservative, and he hosts a show called Outlaw Radio. But I like talking to him because we have really good, productive, sort of high level dialogue, even though we disagree, which is great, and I like when people call into my show to disagree with me. I think it's more stimulating than just, people agreeing all the time. My show is carried on his radio network and so forth. So we have a really nice professional relationship, but I also consider him a friend. But he had an idea recently. So he called into my show because he wanted to talk about the farm murders that go on in South Africa. And I don't know if you're familiar with this, Dr. Kevin. I knew very little about it until talking with Billy about it, but it's an issue that he pays a lot of attention to. And, you have these farmers in South Africa who are murdered. They're often tortured and by these people who show up and they'll kill the family. They'll kill the employees. They'll steal everything. So we'd been discussing that, and I was learning more about it, and I actually got, I always appreciate feedback, be it positive or negative. When people give me feedback, it means they're engaged in the show, they're engaged in what I'm doing, and that's great, and I never take any of it personally, and I appreciate all of it. And I did get some positive feedback from the audience on that conversation that I had with Billy, but I also got some negative feedback, and I'm learning some things that I was naive to, But I didn't realize that this whole issue about the South Africa farm murders, that, you know, it's been going on for decades, and it's really stunning. But I didn't realize the extent to which these white nationalist groups and white supremacists like Daily Stormer and others, I didn't know that they had sort of, over the years, they've very effectively sort of co-opted and hijacked the issue and have been using it for their own nefarious purposes to further their narrative of, you know, white people are under siege and there's a white genocide going on in South Africa and all this nonsense. And, you know, if you look into it, you know, I did some reading outside of what Billy was talking about, and, you know, it's not only white farmers who are murdered, but more white farmers than anyone else, because that's who owns most of the farms. But these white nationalists, they have taken this problem and they've tried to turn it into, like I said, they've tried to add it to the list of white grievances, and there's a white genocide going on, when in reality in South Africa, if you look at murder statistics, far more black South Africans are murdered every year than white South Africans. But if you ignore the big picture and you only look at farms, like I say, in these attacks, it's predominantly white farmers, because that's, although if they have black farm workers, and, you know, they get murdered too when this happens. So Billy, in our conversation, tried to really stress that this has nothing to do with race, or at least if there is a racial component, that's not what he's interested in. He just doesn't like that these farmers are being, in many cases, tortured and murdered, and it's a real problem in South Africa, and there's no help. The government doesn't help protect them. They're not allowed to protect themselves, and the numbers are staggering. But I got some negative feedback from people saying, well, you know, this is a trope used by white nationalists and so forth. And I'm very sensitive to that. Normally, when I receive negative feedback, it's like, okay, well, thank you for the feedback. I'll consider what you're saying. But the negative feedback I got on this really bothered me, because I don't want to be associated with white nationalism, but I also don't want to ignore, you know, an issue that's happening, not the racial part of it, but just the fact that farmers are being slaughtered. I mean, can you imagine that happening in the United States? Of course not, but it's happening in South Africa. It's a terrible thing. And I find myself resentful of the fact that these white nationalists have been able to co-opt the issue to the point where, if you even so much discuss it in media, and this is probably why American media ignores it. The BBC does stories on it. American media ignores it. But I'm realizing, you know, the reason American media ignores it is because apparently if you do discuss it and you show any concern for these farmers who are being killed, then all of a sudden people start tagging you as being sympathetic to white nationalism. So I had to make an editorial decision, and basically I decided, because we were going to have more discussions about this issue in the future with Billy on the show, I had to contact Billy and I said, I'm not going near this anymore. I said, I understand you were doing this in good faith. You know, Billy's intentions were good. You know, you're just trying to highlight a problem, because he has friends there. He has friends in South Africa. I said, I understand your intentions were good. I thought this was a good idea, but now I'm seeing what the backlash is. And for the first time, I'm genuinely uncomfortable with what people are saying to me. And so I was conflicted about it. I don't like to back down on things like this, but I decided to. I caved in. And Billy was very nice. He was very gracious about it and totally professional. He completely understood. And, you know, and so, I mean, we'll still have him on the show occasionally, but he's not going to be calling to discuss this particular issue any further. We're going to leave it alone. But and I explained all of this today on my show because I wanted to let the audience in on what had been happening and what people were saying on social media. Like I said, I got both positive and negative feedback, but the negative feedback really got to me this time, because I don't want to be associated with, you know, these tropes that white nationalists use. So kind of a weird thing this week on my show.
Well, weird, and I'm not familiar with this problem. Like you said, American media doesn't cover it. And though I love, excuse me, I did not reach my mute button in time. Sorry. I was reaching to try to mute that, but I didn't make it.
Yeah. No worries.
But, and I love the BBC when I have time to watch it, but right now I don't have time to watch American media, which actually is a blessing. So,
yeah.
But the question is, who's doing the killing? Who is killing the farmers? And we're going to get that answer when we come back for what's going to be a fascinating second session, because I got a lot of thoughts on this right here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
Conscious media for conscious minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show. And Matt brought a topic about all of these farmers that are getting murdered in South Africa and how the murder of these farmers is being co-opted by white nationalists to build a false case of white genocide. So the question we left it on was, who's killing these farmers?
Well, so if the white nationalists will tell you that it's black South Africans and the government is intentionally, again, this is the narrative of the white nationalists, that the government is intentionally allowing this to go on because they're in on it. They're in on what they call a white genocide. Now, the reality is it may be black South Africans. I mean, there's so many of these killings, though, it's hard to be sure because they almost always get away. There aren't that many arrests. I was looking at a specific incident that Billy Painter had been talking about, this farmer named Brendan Horner, who was a very, very young man who was murdered. They killed him. They tied him to a pole. It appears they may have tortured him. And a couple of black suspects were arrested, but I think they were acquitted. Because they usually get away with it. You know, they do this in these rural areas where there's no law enforcement around. The government does nothing to help. So, these farmers are found dead. and very often their entire families on the farm are found dead, and sometimes even the employees. But the white nationalists have tried to spin this narrative that it's black South Africans and the government is helping them because they have this white genocide agenda. And they try to make it seem like this is, in a broad sense, this is the problem in South Africa, that you have black South Africans murdering white South Africans and trying to kill them off, when in reality, black South Africans are much more the victims of murder in the country. But like I said, it's mostly white farmers. So, but it's an easy crime to get away with, apparently. You know, you just go to a rural area, there's no police within, you know, sometimes hundreds of miles, and, you know, they kill the family and they steal everything, and then they move on.
The question, but you said they're not allowed to defend themselves, the farmers.
Yeah, apparently it's not like in the United States, and this is something that I asked Billy about specifically during our discussion. So in the United States, if you go creeping up on a farm with the intention of doing something, you know, you're probably going to be met with someone who, at the very least, is holding a shotgun. But no, these rural farmers legally, they can't. I guess that there are limits on what they can have for self-defense. And like I said, the government and law enforcement don't do anything for them, so they're really sitting ducks on these farms.
Yeah. I think if I was a farmer in South Africa, I think I would load up on defense material, whether the government liked it or not. Because if they can't,
yeah,
the government can't get there to stop them from killing you, how are they going to get there to take your guns away? I mean, not that I'm a big murderer aspect, but I mean, to me, self-defense is self-defense. And oops, if I kill somebody in self-defense, the bastard deserved to die.
Yeah.
Self-defense.
Yes.
I'm very clear on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So there are two concerns with your story. I mean, there's two concerns with your story. Obviously, the concern that it's happening and the government seems to be wringing its hands and being inept in taking care of this, which is a big problem, which may, in some odd or strange way, say, does the government benefit from it, which isn't about a race issue, but could be about a follow the money issue, if they're not putting resources and energies to solve a problem that's hitting the world stage media in places like the BBC, then I would say the government how is the government benefiting from letting this go on? Because that would be my first question. Not
right.
The race is just, you know, a fault. What's the word? Not false bait. There's a word for it, but I can't think of it right now.
Oh, like a red herring.
Yeah. Red herring.
Yeah.
That's exactly the word. Thank you. I was looking for. Now I know where it was. You stole it from me when I wasn't looking. Red herring.
That's right.
The race can be, yeah, make it a red herring and make it a divisive enough topic that it's not getting the right kind of proper attention. So how is the South African government benefiting from allowing this to continue? Because I would think at this point, they would have to have ways to be doing something to stop it if it's become this much of an issue, and they're choosing to not. So, you know, they're red herring the whole race card, absolutely. The other hand is that even, you know, as they say, even a broken clock is right twice a day. They may be on to something, that there is some kind of government support for this action to happen because the government's not stopping it.
Right, right. But, I mean, it does no one any good to have farmers being killed. you know, just like anywhere. I mean, you need farms, you need farmers who are willing to take that on. So,
the question is, so where do the, if you kill the whole family and all the farm workers, how do the where do the farms go? What happens to that land? Is it seized back by the government, and do they repartition it out if all the relatives are killed?
Great question. I don't know the answer to that, but that's a really good question.
Yeah. There's something that stinks here, and it's not those red herrings going bad.
Right.
But there's a whole series of questions that are not getting asked. I haven't been heard getting asked here. The second thing is, you know, we watched the financial killing, the financial destruction and killing of the American farmer here in this country, supported by our government, by supporting the corporations that took over the majority of the farmland and closed generational family farms.
Mm-hmm.
We've had our own slaughter of farmers in this country. Because we have a government that's owned by big business, and they didn't torture them. They tortured them plenty. They drove them into bankruptcy. They lost everything they had. We just didn't openly murder them. We're just better at being subtle.
Well, also too, you know, during the Trump administration, the tariffs, that were devastating to farmers. You know, and so we were killing agriculture in this country while subsidizing it at the same time. Just madness.
Yeah, just madness. So, and I just wanted to make that comment because we are our own destructive nation. We're just better at tying it up to look prettier. But the other thing that bothers me here, and I support whatever you choose to do, and I get the, you know, the social media, but on the other hand, this feels like it's another version of a page out of Nazi Germany. If we are so toxic in spreading our lie, and so toxic in people, and so hateful for people who speak out the truth, then the truth gets silenced and dies, and the story goes into obscurity, and it benefits the people that are telling the lie. And, you know, I love you, Matt. I've known you for a long time, and I know you do some good, powerful work, and I know you got some loyal followers, and I know your really loyal followers would never buy any of that shit, would not think that you were that person.
Right.
But somebody's trying to shut you up because they want their lies continued. And I'm just seeing too much of it in this country. It makes me nervous for democracy. You know, and, you know, of course we have the whole, you know, David Nunes, who was not going to be able to get reelected with the redistricting anyways, is leaving Congress. Thank God. Can we throw a party? and is taking over the Trump media, which has billions of dollars, which nobody can tell you where it came from.
Which is already being investigated. Yep.
Yes. And you still have people, what was her name? Julie Filiano, who's the granddaughter of the Publix founder. A nice little old white woman putting in hundreds of thousands of dollars for stopping the steal and basically financially underwriting the overthrow of this from a democracy into a haven for a white nation, and everybody else takes no seat at the table. They can come to the table and serve us.
Right.
You can't have a seat at it.
Right, exactly.
You know, they can wear their little white jacket. And, yeah, I mean, the amount of money that we allow to go to so few people that then hold so much power in so many ways.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another cut to democracy, to the surviving of democracy.
Yes.
But it bothers me that, and again, I support whatever you choose to do, but
yeah,
bullying you into silence on a story that has legs on it and has something that you'd normally wrap your teeth in, because we're letting these groups keep control of the story by not challenging them. And you've been around a long time, and you've got a lot of faithful listeners, and they're not going to ever believe that you're a white supremacist, or they're going to listen and give more credence to somebody that's hiding behind a hood. You know, they had a recent protest, and they've gone back to the days of the Ku Klux Klan mask. You saw that, I'm sure.
Yes, I did. Yes. Yeah, one of the things that John Hopwood said to me that was interesting, though, he said he didn't want to see me being used by these people. In other words, he didn't want to see, you know, he was worried about white nationalists kind of latching on to me and saying, look, this guy, Matt Connerton, you know, even he agrees, you know, and then twisting what I'm saying about the issue. You know what I mean? Which I thought was a legitimate concern to raise. I mean, I resent that they've been able to hijack the issue the way they have. But what John said, though, resonated with me when he put it that way. He said, I don't want to see these white nationalists being able to use you for their own purpose, because you're, without meaning to, you know, he said, you're giving, you're kind of giving credence to what they're saying. And that kind of, you know, that didn't sink in right away. But then when I really thought about it, I was like, yeah, I'm pretty uncomfortable. And there's also too, I don't want anyone, you know, we're sponsored by, my radio show is sponsored by a black owned business. And I don't want someone who's complaining to go to them and say, you know, look, you sponsor this guy's show, but look what he's doing. He's enabling he's using these tropes that these white nationalists are using. You know, that all gets very messy. So I'm conflicted about it. I mean, I'm not going to reverse my decision, but I don't feel good about it. I mean, part of me is relieved and part of me is like, maybe I should have held my ground.
Yeah. Well. This is how they win.
Yeah.
This is how they win. So, and I hear the sound of the music. We'll be right back. Where I'm going to bring up another favorite topic of Matt, just so he can go, why do I come on this show once a month?
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show. I think something happened, and I think that Matt lost cell coverage. Matt, are you still there?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, okay, okay. I was afraid that maybe you would have lost cell coverage for the last segment.
No.
So, now, this outlaw guy that comes on, before I move on to the subject...
Yes.
What'd you say his name was again?
Billy Painter. He also goes by Bad Billy, which is what he likes to be called on his show. But I like to use his real name because I think Billy Painter is such a cool name.
Billy Painter. And he's not promoting the idea that this is white genocide.
Right. That's correct.
Okay. So... I take it that there's a lot of places where you said you disagree, but he brought this issue to your radio show to get it more airtime, so to speak, out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to have you do an introduction between Billy Painter and I and see if Billy would like to come on and be a guest on my show and talk about this.
Oh, yeah, I bet he would. I bet he would.
I'm sure him and I will probably disagree on anything and everything else, but that's okay. I am of the mindset, and I've had some pretty fiery topics through the years, and my show has lost a lot of that fire to it as it's come fallen into the, we get you once a month and it gets a little fiery, and then I was doing, you know, lovey cuddle things with Lori once a month, which was great and needed, and astrology once a month. But I remember back when I was doing shows, and you remember talking, now it's become a more common talk, but back early on when I said these are not pro-lifers, they're pro-birthers, they don't give a shit about kids. You can tell by the way they vote for anything to support them. They just want them born. I was saying that 15 years ago.
Right.
And talking about whether we should sterilize people that have certain conditions and stuff like this. I mean, I used to do some pretty hot topics, and the Dr. Kevin Show has kind of mellowed out. I don't know right now whether my producer who's listening to this show is slapping his head and thinking maybe it's time to end the Dr. Kevin Show, or if he's getting excited that maybe I'll have a second come around of, too tired to put up with this shit going on in the world anymore.
Oh.
But, you know, 16 years, and if I can find something that I think needs to have a megaphone, then I'm going to give it one, because why have a megaphone if you don't use it?
Right.
And I think we use it in all sorts of different ways. And so... I am going to ask you quickly, because there's one other subject I want to bring up. Was there anything else since the last time we've talked that really stood out that you don't think is getting, that you think is getting overlooked? I mean, you're so good at that, Matt, that you think is getting overlooked or that you would like to bring to my listeners about what's going on politically right now?
Nothing I can think of off the top of my head that I think is getting overlooked necessarily. I mean, a lot of what we do talk about on my show are issues that, you know, that are discussed widely anyway. Just, you know, we talk about them with my own perspective, but, nothing else really leaps to mind.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, the January 6th committee, they're as pushy as I've seen any committee in a long time to actually do something more than just dramatics and theatrics for the cameras. And we'll see. And as I'm sure you saw, it was 3-0 of supporting Trump's thing. So now he has 14 days to go to the Supreme Court with that he should have the right to claim executive privilege, even though he's no longer the executive.
Right.
Ludicrous. I don't think the Supreme Court's going to be willing to hear it, is my call on it.
Really?
I think they're going to dodge the bullet. You think they're going to want to hear this case?
I think so. I predict that they will.
And you think they'll support Trump?
No, actually, I don't. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised. I think they will not. I don't know on what basis they could, credibly.
Yeah.
Certainly not John Roberts. He won't, I don't think.
No. And I think that Trump's twisted view of the world, that all the ones that he got put on there owe him something, and therefore they're just going to vote in his favor. I think he's like he's about 50 cards short of a 52-card deck, if he still believes that.
Yeah, hopefully.
So I wanted to take a little time to talk about Norm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Norm Moody was on, oh my God, how long was he on air? He was...
Somebody was saying it's been 20 years, but I thought it had actually been a little bit longer than that. I thought it had been 23 or 24 years. A long damn time.
I was thinking it was closer to 25 myself.
Yeah.
So for those of you who don't know, we're talking about a mutual friend of ours and somebody that Matt co-hosted with on a show that was Norm. Well, he had two or three names in the show. When you were on it, it was Norm's Psychic World, or was it Norm and Friends? Or
when I became his co-host, it was Norm's Psychic World. And then at one point during my tenure there, it became Norm and Friends.
Okay. Yes, but he was an interesting fixture at public television for over 20 years easily in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Yes. And
he did a two-hour show every week. God love him. Finding guests and things like this. You were on with him for 8 years.
8 years, yeah.
Yep. And, of course, you and I met through Norm.
That's correct. Yeah.
Because I knew Norm before you did.
Yes.
I actually knew Norm before Angie did, who was the co-host before you.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think about it. He had Angie. He had you. He had Lori, which we all know here on the Dr. Kevin Show, because she went on to be my co-host on Web of Light for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You shared this just heart touching tribute to Norm on, it wasn't TikTok. It was like Instagram video or something, or Facebook. I can't remember. It was a social media platform.
Yeah, it was Facebook. I just streamed it live to Facebook. Yeah.
But Norm was a character, and you know, he didn't really, I mean, you and I, nor Lori, nor Angie, nor who were some of his other regular co-hosts for any length of time?
I think after Lori, he went to a format where he didn't have an official co-host anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because, I mean, part of being Norm's co-host was oftentimes doing all of the grunt work for the show, if I'm not mistaken. That's the impression I had.
It could be, yeah, somewhat. certainly for the live events that we did, it was.
Yeah, yeah. But because I met Norm, I might have met Norm in the first year or two we had the show. But do you, he always said that I saved his life, that I changed his life because of a psychic reading I did for him. Do you remember that? You remember him telling that story? He told that a few times when I was on the show and you were co-hosting.
Yes, I remember him saying that. I don't remember any details, but I remember him saying that you saved his life. That I do recall.
Yeah. I did a psychic reading for Norm, and I'm pretty sure that psychic reading helped Norm. That psychic reading, it helped Norm become okay with his sexuality. And I'm thinking,
oh, okay.
Yeah, because he was having a lot of struggles with that. I mean, he had struggles with that in some level, on some levels, all the way till the day he died.
Yeah.
But you know, I think I pushed him to do the show.
Oh, okay.
He came to me at a psychic fair or something, or I met him, and I think he was pretty early on doing psychic readings himself. I'm trying to remember. It was so far back. Norm would tell the story every time. Well, for several times I was on there, he told the story. He told the story two or three times when you were co-host, a couple of times when Lori was co-host. He told the story when Angie was co-host about me saving his life, and he wouldn't be where he was today. And I think it was because I told him stuff in the psychic reading and kind of befriended him a little bit, and it's part of what made him decide to go on and do the show.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh.
Yeah.
I'll be damned. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm now that I'm remembering, because he'd always tell the story, and he'd always tell little parts of it. And of course, one of the things that happens, and you know this from some of the work you do as a hypnotherapist or doing these shows or stuff like this, is that we can interact with lots of people and they remember us and we kind of remember them. And sometimes we don't, because you were just at a show and you just met 20 people in a row for 15 minutes or a half an hour or something. And they talk about how much you changed your life, and you're going, oh, I'm so glad I did. And you're thinking, oh, who the hell are you? Like, can you do this? Can you give me the show? Can you give me the, you know what I'm talking about, right, Matt?
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
He wanted me at one point to come on and be his co-host. And of course, that never would have worked.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to take some time, but this man, he did more in his own way to normalize psychic in Manchester than anybody else I know.
Mm-hmm.
He was rough around the edges. I certainly didn't agree with his opinions, but he'd say whatever popped in his head came out those lips.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I mean, he used to, you know, sometimes he'd say things that, you know, would really upset people. I guess part of the charm of Norm was trying to always figure out, you know, how much does he really mean of what he says and how much of it is theater, because he did get a kick out of provoking reactions out of people. And sometimes that made for some very good television. But underneath it all, you're right. I mean, he was rough around the edges, but a beautiful soul. And, you know, and I don't think I even fully ever realized just how many lives he touched and how much he meant to people until I saw when he passed the outpouring of just all these people posting on his page from around the world, I was amazed.
Yeah, I haven't gone to Norm's page. I know that Glenn reached out to me privately to let me know the day that he died, what time he died, the day he died. Glenn reached out and told me, and then I saw Lori's posting, and then I saw your posting, but I haven't gone to Norm's. But it doesn't surprise me. I mean, think of how many hours he spent on the air.
Yeah.
And he did have a good heart. I mean, he had his damage like all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but Norm had a good heart. He cared about people.
Yes, absolutely.
Norm Moody, you changed a lot of lives. Mine and Matt were one of those lives. Right, Matt?
100%. Yep. Absolutely.
Matt, I will be talking to you in 2022.
All right. Sounds great. I look forward to it. Thanks, Dr. Kevin.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.